he kind of basically had the idea for us. Because what was happening there, Jason? He came to us desperate. He was like, you know, I'm gonna tell you how it what it is, you know, like this is what's happening. And we already probably he was the one who signed a check of this, you know, like big payments to like celebrity athletes. Like, what am I gonna do? And the answer was, well, just tell the world that. Tell the world. Tell the world that you pay them a lot of money, you know, for them to promote Hulu.
Hello, and welcome to the Bagley Talks to an Important Person show, where the world's top advertising professionals break down their creative process and reveal the secrets and techniques to doing the best work of your life. I'm your host, Jason Bagley. Olivia Rodrigo fan, former ECD of Wieden and Kennedy Portland, and founder of the Audacious School of Astonishing Pursuits, where I teach creatives in 8 weeks what it took me 16 years at Wieden and Kennedy to learn. If you're watching this on YouTube, hi, this is what my face looks like. Let me know what you think in the comments. But if you're listening to the podcast and want to see an anatomical model wearing a Boba Fett helmet or the super detailed presentation decks we share, there's a link to the YouTube channel in the podcast description. I highly recommend it. But without further ado, let's get to today's guest. This week's guest is Guto Araki. Guto grew up in São Paulo and made his way to Chiat, LA, where he did award-winning work for Gatorade. He then became an ECD at Deutsch LA, where, among other things, he created the super smart and funny Snapple campaign and created crazy stunts like Taco Moon for Taco Bell and epic work for Tile. He then became chief creative officer at Big Family Table, where he won the Hulu account and created the now famous and prolific Hulu Has Live Sports campaign, which we will talk about today. And he recently took the creative helm at R&R Partners in Vegas, where he's doing great work for brands like Las Vegas Tourism and the Las Vegas Raiders. Guto is talented. Guto is handsome. Guto is Brazilian. Guto is a certified sea captain. And I'm lucky to say that Guto is one of my best friends. Give it up for Guto Araki.
It's Jason Bagley's advertising podcast. He interviews important people, it's true. But that doesn't mean that you're not important, 'cause he didn't choose to interview you. Maybe he was just planning to contact you to interview you on another day. Or maybe he doesn't have your email address. Every creature on the planet is important in their own special way. Cows, sharks, and gazelles deserve to be interviewed. Birds and whales each have a valid point of view. I mean, they're probably not as interesting to talk to as you, but you're less interesting than the person on this show. It's true, I'm not sure what my point is.
All right, Guto. Great to have you on the show. You know, I don't know if you knew this before this moment, but you are a very important person because you're on the Bagley Talks to an Important Person. And real quick, I want to talk about I had the opportunity to be the chief creative officer of Deutsch LA for about 7 months, maybe the shortest CCO stint of all time. And it wasn't because there was anything wrong with Deutsch. I was actually having a great time, great people. But I got the opportunity to go back and lead Wieden Kennedy Portland. I couldn't turn that down. But when I got there, we met, I think the very first day I was there, I got there, I gave like a speech and said hello, and everybody welcomed me. It was great. And then we met at some point during the day, and I think it took us approximately 15 to 18 seconds to hit it off and become friends. And we've been great friends ever since then. Is that accurate? Do I have that story correct?
How many minutes you said it again?
16 seconds.
Oh, yeah, around that. I was gonna say 18, anywhere in from 18 to 20, but yeah, it's pretty accurate.
You'll go with
And
16.
I think that the reason why we connected so rapidly, it's because you were incredibly honest from moment zero of our conversation. Thank God I wasn't responsible for a certain account in that agency, but I used to be responsible for that account. And you came to me and you asked me, why are the commercials so bad?
I don't even remember that part. And so that was actually, so when that happened, you actually thought, oh, this guy's going to say it like it is, or what happened? Like, why did you respond to that?
Well, it's, you know, it's a little bit like, intervention for people who are like chemically dependent, right? Like if you have one of those in the family, which happens, and it's a disease, the only way for that person to get better is acknowledging that they have that problem. And what happens in agencies, and mainly with new CCOs, is that they don't want to burn the house down the second they walk in, which is exactly what you did. And I appreciated that. Immediately, I was like, well, you know, this man came to this huge agency and he's not holding it back. And you weren't even like, you weren't like aggressive. You meant it. You were really just very honest. And it's a problem that agencies have. I think that every agency has, they host these town halls, right? Like when they talk about the work that they do, and it's very painful for a lot of people, because the town halls, in theory, it's to raise the morale of the agency and show everybody in the agency that they're valuable, that they're participating in something significant. So there is this false celebration of work as if it's spectacular, and everybody feels good. But for creatives, it's very confusing, because if you're a junior creative, you're like, okay, this is good work. And, you know, like you are absorbing the wrong reference. And if you are, if you're a talented creative, you're looking at a town hall and everyone's clapping for terrible work. And then you are deflated right away, because you're like, well, this agency has no idea what's good work. Am I on the wrong place?
Yeah, that is it. It is tough. I've found that to be tough as a creative leader, to know how to handle work that I really don't think is very good, when you're supposed to get up in front of the agency. And it's challenging, because you also know that a lot of people are working really hard and they deserve some acknowledgement for the fact that they're working hard and they are bringing in money to the agency, which is helping to pay everybody's salaries. And there's it's not that there's nothing valuable happening, but I have always felt this painful disconnect with my creative integrity the reason you're saying it's confusing. It kind of also makes it so, like, if I get up there and say, wow, great job, this is great work, everybody, about terrible work, it devalues when I get up there and say it about legitimately great work.
We'll get back to Jason and Guto in a moment, but if you want to listen to this full episode and all other full episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person, check out Creative Mega Machine, Jason's exclusive 8-week creative coaching and mentorship program, where Jason throws 6 metric tons of highly illegal, non-EPA approved rocket fuel on your career. Creative Mega Machine is a time machine for your career, teaching you exactly how to get the best work of your life about a decade earlier than you would otherwise. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with Jason, he will personally answer all your questions as he reveals all the secrets and techniques that he and his teams use to create iconic campaigns for Nike, Old Spice, KFC, Meow Wolf, and more. You will learn in 8 weeks what took him 16 years at Wieden and Kennedy to learn. There is absolutely nothing out there that will accelerate your creativity and earning potential faster than this 5-star rated program. Classes are capped at 20 students, so grab your spot before they're gone. Check out the show notes below to learn more about Creative Mega Machine. Let's get back to the podcast.
It occurs to me that I have not said your last name very often, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to pronounce it correctly, unlike many people. Araki.
I am shocked with the perfect Japanese pronunciation. I can even tell which region from Japan you were by that pronunciation.
I don't believe you.
It's a waste of a last name, right? Because like I think that it's a cool last name, but because there are not that many Gutos in advertising, people don't feel like they need to use my last name.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only, you know, I only know one Guto in my life, so.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a bodybuilder with baggy clothes when it comes to my last name, because no one ever sees it or pronounce it. So thanks for talking about my Japanese last name.
It's a cool last name, and the correct pronunciation is Araki for everyone out there. You've already given two examples of how you admire and value honesty, which leads perfectly into what we wanted to talk about today, Guto, which is the power of honesty and transparency. And this is something that you brought up when we spoke before the podcast about something you wanted to talk about and something that you lean into in your work. So please tell us why you think honesty and transparency is important in life in general, but also specifically as applied to creativity.
Yeah, like for sure. Well, first, I didn't say that before, but it's awesome to be in your podcast. And this is me being very honest to you. I think that what you're doing, not only the podcast, but the school and everything you're doing is magnificent and much needed in an industry that a lot of people think that they should do this, that they should protect their knowledge. So what you're doing on, you know, creating like interesting content using, you know, like your friends, which I know you have many. That's why I'm so flattered to be chosen to be here today. I think it's spectacular. So I think that, you know, the honesty and transparency, as you already pointed out, is essential in life, at least in civilized life. and you know, when we think about ads, I think that the challenge, even though no one points it out and tells you this is the challenge, but the challenge is always, how does a brand connect with people? Like, that's what it is, right? That's why when you have bad clients, they say like, oh, we want to talk to teenagers, so let's put a bunch of teenagers on a commercial, you know? Or we want to talk to a specific tribe, so let's, you know, choose the wardrobe in a certain way. They think somehow that the way to establish a connection is to hold a mirror to the audience, right? Yeah. And then when you think about your life, well, you can have a very strong connection with your neighbor who's 89 years old, that doesn't know what TikTok is, that doesn't buy, you know, off-white sneakers, like that doesn't know anything about the things that you like, but you have this strong connection with that person. And why? Well, because there is some level of transparency in that relationship, because it's your neighbor. They see you every day. And I think that the neighbor example is an interesting one, because the reason why you are yourself to your neighbor is because it's really hard for you to pretend to be someone, considering that you see your neighbor every day, day in, day out, right? So like, for some reason, we your neighbor, without even thinking, you're just yourself. You know, you walk out the door in ridiculous pajamas, you know, like they know exactly what time you come back home. You know, they know that your kids are brats, like they know everything about you. And that's why for some reason you establish a connection with your neighbor, regardless if your neighbor are, you know, like-minded or they're your age or anything else. So I think that like talking about connection, you know, like making now the bridge to honesty and transparency, like you quickly, you get to this conclusion that in order to establish a strong connection, it requires one thing, is for you to be honest. And you know, like, I think that, you know, we always say, like, we don't choose family. We get to choose our friends, but we don't get to choose your family. But even if your family has a lot of problems, there is a certain connection. Obviously, I'm not even talking about like blood connection, DNA or anything, but there is a certain connection that is much deeper with family. And exactly because with your family, you don't have to pretend to be someone that you're not, right? Yeah. So when, how do you bring that into advertising? Well, you know, like when people think about, you know, a brand, a product, service, you know, there is that thing that the brand says, and there is that thing that everyone thinks about that brand. And sometimes it's really hard to talk about that thing because it's either like unhealthy, or it's a thing that destroys the planet, you know, or is overpriced, or it's, you know, like there's questionable practices behind. So obviously, you know, you can address those things into branding and advertising. But there's always something that you can say as a brand that you know that that's how everyone else sees you. And if you're able to find that, even if it's not about the brand, but it's about a specific campaign, I think that you're able to connect with the audience in a much deeper level. And it's the funny part is that you never find that on a brief, because the client, you know, like it, you never find, like, the client will never say like, hey, you know, here's the truth about our product. No, like they will probably say something else, and you have to dig deeper in order to find that. And sometimes you have to dig deeper on people. You have to forget the brand a little bit and just look at a brief as if you didn't even work in advertising. Like, if I was a person, you know, like, how do I see this brand, or what this brand is trying to say to me?
There's also, like, you're talking about connection. I want to get into that more, but in addition to connection, that being honest and transparent can create that connection to a brand. In addition to that, it will almost immediately make you stand out from all the other marketing that's happening, because it is so rare. It is incredibly rare for a brand to be truly honest, vulnerable, transparent, that the minute you go there, you already are standing out amongst almost everything out there, because brands tend to only talk about the less authentic part of just only the good parts, and only the part that they want to talk about, not even necessarily what the consumer cares about or what is going to resonate with the consumer, but what they want the consumer to think, which you can't make a consumer think something. You can only resonate and try to, you know, you can express the features and product, you know, benefits of your brand and hope that it resonates with them, but you can't force them to think a different way for the most part. But anyway, in addition to this connection, I just wanted to point out, like, it in my program, I talk a lot about, like, and I tell creatives, always go to honesty, like, at least explore what's the most honest thing you could say that you probably think you shouldn't even say, or you won't even be allowed to say. Just say it and see what happens. Like, see if that leads to interesting creative ideas, because it will immediately make you stand out.
Really interesting what you're saying about, you know, like, would people even care about what the brand wants to say? Because I think that, like, in our industry, and I don't know, again, like, I know that your audience is very diverse and global at this point. So, you know, maybe in China and Japan, where your audience is huge, they might use a different acronym. But here in the States, we use the acronym RTB, right? Like, the reason to believe that you know, it's always that the nightmare of the creatives, because the client is always trying to put as many RTBs as they can into a 30-second commercial or a social video or whatever that is. And usually the response of the creative is like, oh, there's no room, you know? The truth is, there is room. You know, like in a 30-second spot, you can put like 30 RTVs. But then the problem is like, who cares, right? Like, which is exactly what you're saying. Like, it's easy to put like, you know, to list RTVs in 30 seconds, but no one's going to care. No one's going to listen to it. So that's why like establishing that connection is so important. I think I'm a guy who's a master at that was Jerry Graff, right? Like he, you know, he was able to establish a connection in a very funny, very clever way, very fast. And then from that point on, you know, he could basically say whatever, you know, like the client wanted him to say.
Yeah.
Which is super interesting.
They should call it RTC, the reason to care, which would eliminate a lot of the reason, the RTBs.
Yeah. That's a great one. You should trademark that.
Trademark RTC. You heard it here first. It's automatically trademarked. Attorneys pending. This is a perfect segue to talk about Hulu and what you did with that brand to kind of, I mean, I barely remember Hulu being on the map in terms of, it was on the map in terms of a product, but I don't remember it being on the map in terms of advertising before you started working on it. So talk to us about like the story of that campaign and how you used honesty to come to get to that great campaign.
Yeah. First, I was going to say you're out of focus. Like, you know, it's you're out of focus is me being honest. Like, if yeah. you were.
Thank you for that honesty.
but yeah, like, you know, Hulu, it's, you know, it's a very interesting story, right? Because like Hulu existed for over a decade. And then when they launched that brand, many years ago was this notion that you could watch yesterday's TV into the streaming platform that used to be free. And then, you know, we grew and people forgot about it. Like they had like a really cool ad with, I'm forgot his name, but,
is it Alec really Baldwin? Famous.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was a cool ad. It was talking about how like watching TV will, you know, like, damage your brain or something, and we're here to damage your brain. Yeah. Which it was like, it was a really cool ad. And then they disappeared, right? And then they changed their product dramatically. You know, they became basically a cable replacement. They added a bunch of features and stuff, and also they became a paid service. So people didn't really know what Hulu is. I think that, you know, that's another challenge that I think it's underestimated in advertising. Like when a brand or service, they change so dramatically what they used to be to what they are. The challenge of you recoding people's heads, what's the new thing is, it's much harder if you were actually just a new brand. Because if you're a new brand, it's a blank slate, right? Like you can, you're new product, you can be anything. But if people think you're something and now you're something else, now you have to basically go back and erase what you used to be in order to be the new thing, yeah. right? So it was kind of like the situation that we had with them. So the first thing that we said was like, well, I think that first we need to say something that is absolutely provocative, just so people pay attention to what we have to say, because people won't pay attention to what we have to say. And then we wrote this insight that is very interesting, that is better ruins everything. And it has like a really cool ring to it. Better ruins everything, because once you try something that is better, whatever that thing that you used to have, all of a sudden is crap, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, oh, you love flying on a plane, and then you fly first class, and now every time that you fly coach, you think it's a terrible thing, you know, like, and, you know, the same thing with like, oh, you know, your entire life you lived in an apartment, and then you moved to a slightly bigger house with a walk-in closet, and now it's impossible for you to go back to a walk-in closet-less house, because now you have that, right? And so it's a really interesting insight So we said, okay, with this insight, we should just tell people to never get Hulu. and people, and the second question would be like, why? Well, because once you, you know, we're about to ruin TV for you forever. Once you have this thing, you're just going to think that the TV they used to is crap. But that was super interesting because obviously that was like the first campaign that we did for them. They had just fired an agency after 6 months because the agency wasn't able to nail whatever that was. And then we came up with this idea, never get Hulu. That is like, we're talking about honesty. It's a little bit disingenuous, but it's obviously a joke. But then it goes into something that actually makes an insight that makes sense, that when you experience better, you don't want to go back, right?
As well as reverse psychology.
True, yeah. So that was interesting, but I think that we peaked. Like, I think that not we peaked, but I think that we found the footing for the brand really with a sports campaign. And what happened is that the people at Hulu, they're really smart. So they quickly realized that the only thing that people care about live television is sports. Because, you know, like shows you can watch in whatever streaming, but like sports to this day, like that is the one thing that you want to watch live, right? Like you want to see the score of the game as it happens. And sports is something you watch. News too, but I guess news you don't watch on TV anymore. You kind of like read it on your phone. Yeah. But sports, like, you know, sports is the one thing that, you know, you need to watch it live. So our client, Ryan Crosby, who's a brilliant guy too, and Michael Schneider, another brilliant guy, great human beings. They basically came to us and they said, well, another thing that is interesting, this part of the business didn't belong to us, belonged to another agency, and they could not come up with something that was, you know, appropriate. So like they came up to us and they say like, look, sports is, you know, why people care about live TV. And but it's really hard to break into sports culture if you're an outsider. Like, you know, you work at White and you guys had like Powerade, you know, like you and Nike, and you know, like sports culture is like a very hard to get in kind of club.
Yeah.
And you know, like, so how do we do this? And gets worse. We already paid a lot of money to all these celebrity athletes. You know, like, now we need to make this work. So he kind of basically had the idea for us. Because what was happening there, Jason? He came to us desperate. He was like, you know, I'm going to tell you what it is. You know, like, this is what's happening. And we already, probably he was the one who signed a check of this, you know, like big payments to like celebrity athletes. Like, what am I going to do? And the answer was, well, just tell the world that. Tell the world. Tell the world that you pay them a lot of money, you know, for them to promote Hulu. So that's exactly what we did. Like, so, you know, fast forward to a video of Damon Lillard saying, why am I in a sponsor post for Hulu? Because they paid me a lot.
It's genius.
And now, an influencer campaign you can't call bullshit on.
Why am I in this sponsor post for Hulu? Because they're paying me. A lot.
Well, that was real. But let's back up. This is Hulu. Pretty much everyone in the U.S. knew about it, but pretty much no one knew Hulu had live TV for sports. Sports! So Hulu threw a ton of cash at some NBA All-Stars and said, create an influencer campaign that feels real and authentic. Huh? Influencers are just people trying to hide the fact they're getting paid to sell stuff. But not our influencers. They got paid and got straight to the point.
Hulu has live sports.
Hulu has live sports.
Hulu has live sports.
These guys were sick and tired of faking it for other brands, so we let them sell out however they wanted to. Take Damian Lillard. Everyone knows him for his tattoos. And heading into All-Star Weekend, he teased a new one.
It's your boy, Dame Dollar. I'm about to get some new ink, and I'm going to be showing y'all for the first time at All-Star Weekend. So stay tuned.
The internet theories lit up until Damian shared his contract with Hulu just as our TV spot dropped during the game.
Hulu has live sports.
Really?
Yeah, it's in my contract.
And then there's Joel Embiid, who famously nicknamed himself The Process. He told his 3.4 million followers it was now Hulu has live sports.
Mr. Embiid, why'd you change your nickname?
Money.
And while sneakerheads everywhere were waiting for Giannis Antetokounmpo's first signature Nikes, he teased this and messed with sneaker culture by dropping his first signature slippers.
Do I have to wear this out in public?
No, never. See, out in the world, you're Nike.
But on the couch, you're Hulu has live sports.
Not to be outdone by Nike, Adidas dropped custom Hulu sellout Dame 5s. Then, even more All-Stars sold out. We knew the campaign was taking off when fans started changing their handles. Social media blew up, and the press took note. And there you have it, 100% bullshit-free influencer campaign. But don't take our word for it.
Hulu should win an award for this. Get
that. And you know what's so funny about that? That, again, just like I was talking about in Portrait from Detroit, like now I can post-rationalize and say that everything was intentional, but it wasn't. One thing that we had no idea is that in sports culture, more specific hoops culture, NBA, basketball, there is part of the culture is the ostentation, is to show that you're rich, that you're successful, that you have like a gold-plated Rolls Royce, and you know that you're very rich, like the abundance. So when these athletes like, wait, what? I'm gonna be fanning myself with a stack of money? Great, you know. So it just kept on getting more and more absurd. And then I think that every brand, they've been to that position where they want to use a celebrity, and the celebrity is like, I don't know if you know. This brand's right for me. With Hulu, I mean, Hulu wasn't a brand right for any athlete. Hulu had no business in sports. But hey, look, you're giving the chance for the celebrity to say, I don't care about this brand. I'm just here because they pay me a lot of money. And by the way, look at all the money that they paid me. It's basically an ad to tell the world how cool they are instead of the brand, right? And that was super powerful. And again, like fast forward, was like 3 years of Hulu has live sports. You know, like I think that we took, I don't remember. I'm probably gonna butcher, but I think we took from 21 to 29 million subscribers, like for a brand that was existed for like 11 years. You know, so like the growth that we brought into the brand, and again, like I think from a pop culture standpoint. If you watch sports, you know Hulu has live sports. That thing went off the rails. It became bigger than we could ever imagine.
And the interesting thing and the kind of brilliant thing about it is everyone already knew that about celebrity endorsements. Like when LeBron gets on and is on an ad for the Tonal workout machine, everyone knows, first of all, they're like, he probably doesn't use that machine because he has like a team of personal trainers. I know they just handed him a giant check. And so to just say that and to be the first brand that really just acknowledges that is, it's weird. It's weird to even, like, I'm not smart enough to figure out all the reasons why, all the many levels that works. But on one level, it's like, showing respect to the viewer where you're like, we know that you know that we just paid all these athletes. So we're not going to disrespect you by trying to act like we didn't pay all these athletes and try to act like they just happen to love our streaming service. We're just going to tell you that, yeah, we paid them. You know that we did. You already know we did. And because we're going to tell you, you're going to like us way more for telling you the truth about it in a funny, creative, entertaining way.
100%. It's so funny too, because like there is, you know, like out of like the realm or of forbidden conversations, the compensation is always a tough one, right? Like, you know, like if you're like really close with someone and you hear, oh yeah, like, you know, John Smith went from agency A to agency B. If you're really close to that person, you probably know that that happened because that person is making a lot of money, you know, like, but, But and I think I would say that that's probably what everyone's wondering. Like, I wonder how much money, you know, John Smith's making now that he is working for that agency, right? So like to basically bust down the door of that conversation into a commercial, it was pretty funny. And again, like there are other layers to it that made it more special. I think that the one thing that is interesting is that whenever there is this like sponsorship deals, I think that there is a lot of cautiousness to not mix like the value of the athlete with the value of the brand. But in this case, I think at a certain point we even wrote like a social video that is just like, why should you get Hulu? I don't know. I don't use it, but they paid me a lot of money to be this ad. Yeah, I think we even got to that, and then we're like, well, it might be too much. We might not need to go that far. But basically, by doing that, we could put anyone in our commercial because we were not paying them to pretend that they like that brand, you know, and that was all honesty. That was all,
yeah,
you know,
brilliant,
being transparent.
I try always on this podcast to make this as practical and useful to creatives so that they can actually go away and put it into use to make better work. So what are some of the ways that you like to do this? Because this is definitely, I think, a hallmark of Guto's work is to try to find like, what is the honest, provocative, interesting, authentic thing that we can say? And so are there, like, how do you get to that? Are there questions you ask yourself, or what is your approach to figuring out like, because there are, as you said at the beginning, there's things that are honest that you shouldn't say, but how do you get to something interesting that you can say that would actually help the brand to say it? Like, I'm sure there's more than one way, but what's generally some of your approaches to that?
Yeah, well, I think that the first step, no matter what the gig is, you should go to your boss and tell them whether or not they gain weight.
That's step number one.
Step number one, you start there. But I think that the most important one is, and I know that a lot of creatives struggle with it. Like, have you been in a situation where you're writing a beautiful ad or a really funny ad or a smart ad that even though the idea is cool, you're not convinced? Because if you are there in that situation, you're not convinced that the product delivers on what is, if you're in that situation, you're probably not there. Because I think that, you know, like the most powerful work without a doubt will come from a person who actually believes on what they're saying. I think that is like crucial, right? Like, and I think that, you know, the guardrails for that to happen, as you said, there are things that you just can't say it. And that there are other things that might not be as powerful. I don't know if there is. You can tell that I'm dancing around because I don't have a precise answer to your question.
Well,
but I go ahead. Please interrupt me right now.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think there's many ways. There's not one way to get to an interesting, authentic, and honest message for a brand. There's different ways you can get to it, and hopefully, you can partner with your strategist and they may or may not bring you anything in the brief that you can use as leverage or that you can use as a jumping off point, but like talk to them about that and hash it out with the strategist and be like, hey, I want to say like, we need to get to something more authentic and more true. Like what are some interesting things, even if they're maybe not the most flattering things, what can we say about this brand that might be interesting? Is there any interesting story or backstory to this brand, whether it be flattering or not flattering? And try to get them, because a lot of times they've done research and they've looked into the brand more than you have at that point. So take advantage of them. But also, I like to start out with just write down everything you know that is true about this brand, the assignment, the product, and just write it down. Just what is true? Positive, negative, everything. And don't worry about writing it down in an interesting way to begin with. Just like get it down on paper. Like what are everything that's true? Okay, this brand is third in the category. That's like a fact. Okay, maybe there's something that you can talk about. Like the famous campaign, I think it was for Avis?
The car rental, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was for Avis rental car. And their thing, they were number two, like pretty distantly behind, I think, Hertz. And that was their campaign. Like, we're number two, so we try harder. Their whole campaign was admitting that they were not number one. So, like, that's an example of just starting with the insight of, okay, this company is number two, or this company, whatever it is, just write down the facts of everything. And with a particular focus on maybe the things that are not the things that a brand would talk about in advertising, that maybe are not like the most flattering, or they're not like the best. And just start there and see if that leads to an interesting thing that you can talk about. And then another thing is just going, I have this list of 70 questions or something that I call my mega machine questions that I give to people in my program, but just a bunch of provocative questions that spark ideas. But a lot of them are about getting to the truth. So one of them is like, what is the worst thing we could possibly say about this brand? What could we say about this? What could I say about this brand, but I wouldn't be allowed to say it? What should I never say? What should I never admit? Like, get to the things that you shouldn't say. And often, or sometimes you'll find like, okay, there actually is a way that I can talk about that thing that's really interesting. We stopped recording, and then Guto and I just kept talking, and we started on what I think is such an interesting conversation that I'm like, we should be recording this. So first start with the 7-38-55 rule.
So the 7-38-55 rule is a super interesting one, because and I think that there, Chris Voss that we're talking about, he even talks about this in a masterclass or something. But the rule is basically is science, this, guys. It's science.
It's science. Right? Don't question science. It. It's science.
Don't question it. It's hard science. So this guy from UCLA, I'm gonna cheat here and see his name because I forgot. His name is Albert Mehrabian. He was a professor, a psychology professor of UCLA. He ran this study and he realized that 7-38-55 rule. So 7% is what you say, 55% is how you say it. No, 7% is what you say, 38% is how you say it, and 55% is your body language. That's mind-blowing, right? Like, basically, like, you're there, blah, blah, blah. No one is actually paying attention on, I mean, not no one's paying attention. Only 7% of what you're saying is actually relevant. The rest is the tone and your body language. And Jason, like, you did a really interesting remark. Why is that? Why is that?
Because we're animals. We're animals. And the animal kingdom communicates almost entirely through body language, scent, and a little bit of sound. But what I was saying is that language, words can communicate complex ideas, and they can communicate subtle ideas and complex ideas, but it's actually a very bad technology. It's a technology that is extremely prone to misinterpretation and misunderstanding, whereas a dog's communication through scent is 100% accurate. Now, they can't communicate complex ideas necessarily, but they know with 100% accuracy if another dog is in heat, if another dog is sick. They know what another dog has eaten in the last 24 hours. It's 100% accurate. But when we talk as humans, just the words, there is incredible misunderstanding, incredible misinterpretation. So this rule is really interesting, and it kind of makes sense if you think about the fact that we're part of the animal kingdom, and the animal kingdom communicates mostly through things other than sound. But continue.
Here's another thing that is funny to add to. And by the way, we're not just talking about this because it's two guys that don't know anything about science discussing science. We're talking about this, how this connects directly to selling ideas. And you know, like, because if you think about it, here's one thing that dogs are really good at it, at show the other dog dominance or lack of, right? Like, you put five dogs together, it probably takes like 2 seconds for them to figure out who's the dominant one.
Yeah.
They don't talk. They're not asking questions to each other. Like, there's something that they do with their tail or the way that they, you know, circle the other dog or whatever it is that they know right away the hierarchy, the dominance. And once the dominance is established, then they have a harmonic, you know, coexistence.
Yeah, and then they can start to cooperate and get things done together.
Exactly. Which, by the way, I think that like those dogs that pull, like those dogs in Alaska, Antarctica, whatever it is that they pull, you know, like the Eskimos.
Yeah.
It's not a human that goes there and say like, hey, dog, you should be the dog that goes in front and you should be the dog that goes in the back. The dogs, they self-organize. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
That they wake up and they know exactly, you know, who should be the lead, you know, like who should be in what position. And it goes on to this, the communication is insane, right?
This should be such a wake-up call to anyone trying to sell an idea, because at least in our industry, in advertising, we spend 99% of our time on the words, on the least effective part of the sales pitch and of the deck. We just sweat and labor and craft. Oh, we got to change this word to this word. And we figure out what we're going to say in the meeting, what words are going to come out of our that's only 7%. We spend, in my experience, we spend almost no time on how are we going to say it? What is the tone that you're going to say it? What is the level of enthusiasm that you're going to say it with? What are you going to do with your body? How are you going to move? What are you going to do with your hands? Are you doing something with your body that is, if you have the absolute perfect words and you do the wrong thing with your body language, that body language, based on this scientific fact that we just talked about, is going to completely overwhelm the dumb words that you spent hours worrying about. Like, basically, we need to spend way more time on how we're going to say it and how we're going to present and what our body language is going to be. And we put all the time into the words.
It's so true. And obviously, like, if you stretch to the extreme, you know, like, you know, if you're like presenting something, sticking your finger in your nose, I don't think it's going to go well. So, you know, like, no matter how smart the words are coming out of your mouth. But here's another thing too that it's interesting, Jason, that I don't remember who was telling me this, but I thought it was brilliant. I don't even think it was in advertising, but someone told me that writing is not supposed to be used to communicate in real time. And if you think about it, like, writing was created to leave knowledge to the others that would come. Like, you know, like the Egyptians or whoever was like the civilization, they're like, well, you know, through our hard life, we discovered this thing. Let's write somewhere because those who come after, they will have that jump start.
Yeah.
But ideally, if they could tell them in real time, those words would be much better, right? So if you apply that to what we do, I think that the worst presenter, no matter how brilliant of a writer he is the guy who goes there in front of a client and reads the script, because he's basically bringing down all the power, all the remaining 93% of power that he has, you know, and bringing down to 7%. And it's so interesting that even in speeches, and again, like, obviously, like, you know, big important speeches, people use the prompter, and we know that, but still, we prefer those who fool us, those who look like they're not reading,
yeah,
or those who at least know how to improvise in a way that makes you think that they are just speaking from the heart.
Yeah,
you know, which is fascinating.
So, do you? I mean, this is making me realize, just talking about this, that I read scripts too much. Like, it's making me wonder, should I ever reference a script, or should I just figure out how to present a script without even looking at it in a storytelling way? And that's hard to, I don't think you can do that completely, because sometimes the dialogue is so critical to the comedy or to the story, like the specific dialogue that's written. But at the very least, there should be far less. I mean, one of the things that I find is that creatives put way too much stage direction in scripts, and that nothing is going to kill the vibe of a presentation more than a bunch of like, and then the actor moves to the left of screen and they pick up a vase and blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah, camera pans to the side and then, bro,
like, nobody cares. The client does not care. That those are notes for a director,
yes,
that you aren't going to need, because this script is not selling because you talked too much about what the camera was doing.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, here's like what I try to do. And it's this something else that, you know, like, I was going to talk about and I completely forgot. At a certain point, I would even ask creatives after going to the deck a simple question: are you bored or not? Because, like, if flipping through a deck, you're getting bored, that's a really bad sign. No matter if everything that is on those slides are very important, right? Like, if you're bored, it's not a good sign. But when it comes to scripts, what I try to do is, you know, obviously, like, writing, it's really important to write so you can organize your thoughts and think about, like, the dialogue lines, what's better, what's not. But once you get to that point that you think it's good and you see the magic and do the nuances, because you are listening your own voice reading that thing. And then when you present, even ideally, you should be able to present that from the heart and not read technical lines, which I agree with you are completely vibe killer. And then after you read the scripts and the client already liked, then you leave a PDF with a script, because they would read that script thinking not about the story, but they would think about how you presented, how the tone that you deliver those messages,
yeah,
how you moved your body, and so on. Yeah. You know, like almost a leave behind. Another thing that I usually do when I have like a funny script, I usually put in the presentation, I don't put the script up into the screen. I put just the visual of the script up into the screen and I tell them the script.
Yeah.
And then I flip to a slide where there is the script there so they can basically read it again. But at that point, they already know the tone of the script, the speed of the script, like what's going on, all the jokes and whatnot.
That's an interesting way I have not thought about that, but if you present it well and you do it in the form of a story and you do it with energy and enthusiasm and storytelling, when they read the leave behind script, that's what they're going to remember. They're not just going to, but if you present it like a robot and just read it off, then when they read the script later, they're going to probably have that same energy that the script is being presented like a robot. I mean, it makes me want to push this even from my presentation skills further by now. I can imagine the best way to do it is to, if there are critical lines of dialogue that are written, you know, because we take a lot of craft in writing the funniest way of saying a line or whatever, I'll have some way of, if I can't memorize it, I'll write that somewhere that I can, when I get to that point in the script, I can say the line properly, but the rest of it is all just from the heart, from memory. So I can just tell it like a story rather than like just read the whole thing. But
yeah, you know, another classic example, and I don't even know if this is like, you know, I don't think it is like wrong to say, but one time I was working with a really good writer and we had a review and he sent me the script prior the review and I saw the script. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. I thought it was funny. I was like, that's kind of funny. But then when this guy came and presented the script, he presented the character of the script, the lines of the character of the script, he presented with a lisp. He talked as the character that he already had casted in his mind had a lisp. And that made the entire thing way funnier. And he didn't write in the script like, well, you know, like, and then the little boy that walks in the store, he has a lisp, you know, has a lisp. He didn't write that anywhere. But when he presented as if the boy had a lisp. So to me, after that, I was like reading that script and thinking about a boy with a lisp and thinking that is hilarious. That is super funny. And again, maybe if he wrote that on the script, it wouldn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about, you know what I'm saying? Well, I told you a joke the other day. This one's pretty dark. Should we tell the joke of the guy in the hospital? Too dark?
No, we can always cut it out and tell it.
All right. So like that joke that I told you the other day, which now I already gave away that it's a joke, but like, you know, this old man wakes up in the hospital and then the doctor comes, like three doctors come to the room and the chief doctor says, Mr. Wilson, soon you'll be able to see your family. And Mr. Wilson goes, oh, I wish, I'm the last remaining. My entire family already passed away. And the doctor goes, we know. So, you know, what would be, if this was a script, open on a hospital room, there are equipments beeping everywhere. The camera pans to a man laying on a bed. All of this, you know, it's already like, it's terrible, right? Yeah. Like I'm already bored.
It's a game changer to think about this 7-38-55 rule. To think about the fact that the words are literally only 7%.
Sorry for cutting Guto and Jason off there. If you want to listen to the full 2.5 hour version of this podcast, go to schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and check out Creative Mega Machine. If you get in, Jason Bagley himself will teach you the secrets and techniques to doing the best work of your life, getting better creative opportunities, making more money, and having more fun. We hope you enjoyed the first part of the episode, and we hope to see you in the second.